And like the idea that the simulation that people would want to experience before their death would be this like really eerie, gross, just like America ew mm-hmm. time. Like, you know, like it's just really only he would think yeah. that would be like the sweet send off that they would need. You know what I mean? Like,
I gave you America. I'm Gabe.
And I'm Kat.
And we're the Ghouls Next Door. We're the Americans next door.
Yeah.
We're supposed to be here.
What is stolen land?
Spoilers. We all can be here.
Yeah.
And that's allowed. That's how we got here in the first place. So.
Yeah. Except ours was mean. Yes. Ours was really awful.
And we continue to be that, yeah. Which is so fun.
We have
a media literacy show from a horror lens where we explore the real life, historical, and sociological influences behind our cinematic fears. And today we are talking about Culture Shock, which is a part of Hulu's Into the Dark series, where they were creating horror films based around different holidays. And this one was for the 4th of July, so that's Independence Day. And I believe it is that, you know, every few days a country celebrates its independence from Europe.
Yeah,
so England, yeah. And I think it's really funny that, you know, we're celebrating the time when we did that. And then we continue to harm other people who are trying to get here. And
yeah, it's
manifest their own destiny, you know?
Yeah, it's real gross. I mean, honestly, if not for America being gross, what would we talk about? Probably nicer things.
But there's still stuff. Like, it's not just America. There's trauma and all kinds of things.
Countries do awful all the time.
And people do awful. So, yeah.
So I guess it doesn't help. Content. It's just we get a little extra content because U.S. and we live here. So we're extra in tune with how it can be.
Yeah, precisely. And this episode, so we originally in our New Year, New Me series weren't planning to cover Culture Shock. We did very, very briefly cover Culture Shock in our Latinx representation episode in the way, 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 way back machine of the ghouls. It was like forever ago. Well,
before time.
It was before video content, and it was also before... We did too much of our,
I don't remember what is, but I know we've been doing this for a million years, so I believe you.
Yeah, it was, like I said, a long time ago before video content and before we did super intense research, and it was alongside when we did The Curse of La Llorona, and we eventually covered La Llorona, which was an actual film, and Kat, I'm sure you're going to reference it. In my section, I will also reference quite a few episodes that cover things that are going to come up just in this film, because they're issues that we have covered and just issues that have been brought about by other films, documentaries, horror movies alike. And this one we actually chose because I thought I remembered it when we just covered last week. Don't worry, darling. And I was like, wait a second. Haven't we done this before? And yes, of course we have, because like people have been comparing it to Stepford Wives, Matrix, even Get Out to a degree. Mm-hmm. And absolutely, it is those things. But Don't Worry, Darling is also incredibly this film. And parts of it, I was like, I'm fairly certain Olivia Wilde saw this film. There's no way.
Yeah.
It's
But it's like, the same movie. With a different reason. It's like if a different person made that movie, it would be saying different things. And that's what we have here.
Yeah. It was like, you know, the struggle we had last week was, you know, Olivia Wilde only has so much to say from her lens and from her place. And that's fine. Right. And she did it. She said what she wanted to say. And this film is, okay, well, what if somebody else got to say something? And here's what we have. And it's something that could say so much more with less and be so much more impactful. Like, as beautiful and well acted as Don't Worry, Darling was. And this one is, you know, is has some beautiful moments in it for sure. It has some scary moments. It is definitely does not have the same budget, does not have the same support and backing. And at times it was much more heartfelt for me. Like there were moments where I was just like really torn up or distraught about what was going on in a way that I never really felt in Don't Worry, Darling.
Yeah, there was a lot more like at stake and at, like to lose in this one. Like there were characters we literally lose and it's devastating. And I'll definitely unpack that a little bit in my section, but it's just like, this one felt heavier because the content that it was bringing like to our attention actively is heavy in a way that just like, yes, oppression and feminism and like patriarchy is heavy, but not in the same way that immigration and migration and US's destruction of people is. It's a different way. But different amount needs to be paid attention to. And this one, it was more important in that way, for sure.
Yeah. And there's a different care that had to be taken too, because it's covering such heavy topics that are very, very real. And so there is an appreciation I have for the director for that, but also this kind of where I feel like watching the film, you need like a compendium like us, right? Like you need something to tell you some of the reasons why these things are horrifying. Like you get it when you're watching, but I think it hits harder when you have the information and the weight is more clear. And I think without that, we can sometimes miss the severity of the situation. And that just comes with, you know, people not being knowledgeable. One thing I found when I was like doing the research for this was encountering so many articles and papers that were behind a paywall. And that was super frustrating because that is information that we should have. Information should be free. And it's information that the people who want it and need it and would benefit from it can't always afford. And the people who can afford it don't care. So that's why the same thing with this film is like, who's watching a Into the Dark Hulu film? Not a lot of people, but people are going to flock to Olivia Wilde's film, you know? Just a little it's feelings that I have.
Reasonably.
So, why don't we hop in, because it is a lengthy one. And I'm going to do my best. This one is very heavy and I was trying not to be heavy. I was trying to also be like Juicy Sal Guerrero, but it's hard.
It's okay to get into, I mean, I feel like the people who've been with us from 2 years ago on know generally that we can get a little heavy, especially if you watch next week's episode, which I reference, but I realize in hindsight hasn't come out yet in this world. So
We are recording a little backwards. So for folks, I almost referenced it too. And I was like, wait, they won't know what it is. And I was like, I'm not going to like premonition it. That's weird.
I might, but it's okay.
It's okay. I'd say anyone who, you know, even started listening back in 2020 when we took like that strong turn into talking about heavier things and really taking control of the fact that we are an independent show, right? We are the controllers of this and what we cover and what we're going to say. And we definitely take advantage of that. And so, like, come at me. if you want to try. This in this specific episode, you know, is something that I feel really strongly about. There's a lot of layers to things that are being done to people who look like me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it feels really intense. And yeah. So definitely come in understanding there is, you know, trigger warnings throughout. And we're delicate with it, but also angry about what's going on.
Yeah.
And so, and it's still going on, and not people aren't talking about it as much. And that's really aggravating. So all that being said, let's talk about culture shock. So Culture Shock is from 2019 and is about this thriller follows a young Mexican woman in pursuit of the American dream who crosses illegally into the United States only to find herself in an American nightmare. Wink. It's directed by Gigi Salguero and it is written by Efren Hernandez, James Benson and Gigi Salguero. And I find that important because, you know, Gigi came on as the director, but the script was more or less already written out.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was kind of spearheading it and, you know, bringing it to life and was able to pitch it in a way where it got that funding and backing that it did
yeah.
for something like Hulu. And I think that's awesome. I threw like one of the Latine like filmmaking like either a conference or something, I encountered Gigi Salguero and like a panel, and I found her really motivating and lively. She's very lively and fun and passionate about what she does. So I can see like they picked the right person. They picked someone who's going to care and also do it in a really great way. So
yeah.
Shout out to her. Maybe one day we'll talk to her on our show. It's Gigi, if you're out there, hi.
We like you.
Good job.
Yeah.
I'm so glad. I wish more money for you.
Yes.
More money, more support for you in the future. So let's talk about the film. So Stepford Wives, Matrix, Pleasantville, and Don't Worry, Darling, before it even existed, wrapped up in an impactful and dark bow. That is what this film is. It is a science fiction horror film that leans a bit more into nonfiction, addressing the many layers of horror surrounding immigration. The very many, like all the different angles you could have mm-hmm. with immigration. So it's a film where no matter how gross or gory it could get, the horrors there in the film pale in comparison to the ones experienced in reality. And the director takes us on a journey with the protagonist, Marisol, who's played by Martha Higuereta, who I recognize her in, what was she in? She's in like other science fiction-y shows. Altered Carbon.
I remember that show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's in Altered Carbon, which one day we will cover because I have things to say. But in this, Marisol is a pregnant woman seeking the American dream across the border. And it starts in Mexico, where we meet Marisol long after a failed attempt at crossing the border. And during her first attempt, she was assaulted by someone that she trusted, her boyfriend at the time, Oscar, who abandons her and makes his way across without her. Now incredibly pregnant and still eager to cross, if not more so, she mm-hmm. seeks out the coyote that took her the first time to take her this time. And later, when we see the struggles and dangers that Marisol faces in crossing the border, we wonder what could be pushing her forward despite the dangers, right? What is propelling her forward, even though she knows it's scary and everyone is telling her, like, there's so many, even the coyote is like, you know how dangerous it is for women and you're like hella pregnant.
Yeah.
And she's still pushing forward. So you have to wonder what is doing that. And I think what's really interesting about this is we get a glimpse into what could be inspiring her flee,
mm-hmm.
but it's really ambiguous. It really is her fleeing for an American dream. And we don't, like, it's like insinuated and we do see like pieces of it, of the horrors, but a lot of that is through the journey itself of getting there. So for that, I do think we are missing the backstory. And I think that's very intentional because we don't want to, because the point is the American dream in America is awful, not Mexico is also awful.
Yeah.
It's like this journey is dangerous and people are making it.
Yeah.
So something's going on here that is bringing them here, but we're not, it's not important to cover why. So we do catch glimpses of what Marisol is leaving behind, including her mother and a community of women who are struggling with their own insecurities, restrictions, and fears. Marisol's mother in a scene is encouraging these women to carry birth control. She's urging them to do that. And the unspoken danger is evident in Marisol's current condition and her dire situation. Mm-hmm. Right? So she's trying to run and she's 9 months pregnant.
Yeah.
Girls don't be this, right?
Yeah.
And they, still fight against that and refuse, explaining that they're Catholic. But further, there's, you know, this unspoken moment because there's no ignoring also the, like, the history and the distrust that came from that history of brown women regarding birth control, which has historically been experimented on using Latine and Black women, mm-hmm. like specifically. And that often results in health complications, sterilization, and even death. And if you do want to learn more about that specific, like the practices of using even Puerto Rican women mm-hmm. to test out the effects of birth control before they were safe for consumption, then you can listen to our episode on the population control where mm-hmm. we talk about documentaries that were covering that. We also covered the fact that that's still happening and some of those horrors are still going on that happen once they get over here too.
Yeah.
So those are some of the conditions in which women are needing to flee, or like it kind of spells out there is danger here, mm-hmm. Not even just in trying to leave. And so Marisol explains to her mother that there is nothing here for her child and that she has no plan of raising her in this place. She is a woman experiencing some of the horrors of Mexico at this time, doesn't want to bring up her daughter in the same space. And mm-hmm. her mom's like, but I'm here. and she set her eyes on a dream, this fabricated ideal world called America. And her mom's like, that is exactly what it is, a dream. Mm-hmm. Like, you get out of your own head. And she's like, no, I got to do it. So if you do need more information to understand Marisol and other women like her's journeys, I encourage you to watch the film Tigers Are Not Afraid, which is primarily about children in Mexico, but it does cover femicide and a lot of the horrors that are happening to women and children in Mexico right now. You can listen to our episodes about it. And that film is by Isa Lopez. And it is another one of those films we're really glad exists. Mm-hmm. It's heavy, much heavier than this.
Yeah.
So if any of this feels rough, maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe just listen to our episode about it.
Yeah.
That one's heavy. And for good reason. Mm-hmm. So whatever the reasons, Marisol pushes through the tumultuous journey. She encounters others as desperate as she is, including a young Guatemalan boy named Ricky, played by Ian Inigo, and a killer with tattoos and a history named Santo, played by Richard Cabral, who's fun fact, the most loco from the Key and Peele skit where they're like, oh, I'm the most loco out of all of them. He's the one who's the most loco. He's the one who catches the bullet in his teeth. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, the most loco. Just fun. And he's playing like this, you know, hardened, like he's got tattoos that are supposed to tell like you earn them mm-hmm. through murder. He's probably with the cartel or something and escaping, trying to find a new life and start over. And he's one of the best people that are in this film. And mm-hmm. he's like not even doing anything that great.
Yeah, he's not contributing to the harm and helping protect.
Yeah, he's trying to help. He's trying to be better. And that in itself is like, forget about wherever else he was, right?
Yeah.
And despite the dangers and the tension, each stop on the journey is ripe with men taking advantage of the situation for money or other horrifying things. And be gross. And that's exactly what it is. Is and for women who are traveling on it like all alone and children traveling all alone, that in itself was scary. Like before mm-hmm. we even got to the we're scary in America, it was is already scary. Yeah. And in the night, when they are making their last run to the border, they are confronted by the terror of the cartel and the American Border Patrol.
Yeah.
So they're stuck between a rock and an arguably worse rock, and they try to make it only to ultimately be captured by the patrol.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very brief moment. It's just pure, it's like a lot of darkness and just panic and like seeing light for a brief moment, seeing gunfire, hearing shouts in Spanish, then hearing shouts in English.
Yeah.
And lights over here, lights over there. And it's this really discombobulated terror moment. And yeah. For me, I think that was the best scene in the whole film.
Yeah.
Because that was really like, there's nothing. Like, she has been pushing through, encountering really horrible situations, all with this hope of getting to this like wonderful land, and then she's like confronted by two horrors at once.
Yeah,
because both sides suck.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an understatement. saying the Border Patrol sucks, the cartel sucks. Like, yeah. It's a little more than that, but you can see what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So here is where the film takes a quick turn into science fiction, and Marisol wakes in a pristine house, no longer pregnant, and dressed in pastels to match the entire town. Everything is pastel, which is where, like, she says it's like inspired by part of it's Pleasantville. Even though Pleasantville is in black and white most of the time.
Yeah.
I get what she's saying. Second of all, it was all 1950s publicity and like, what was the word? Propaganda.
Of what like America was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's like that idyllic, like those posters that are just like paused. Kind of like what we would see in like Fallout, where it was like, America was so beautiful and perfect.
Yeah.
And then we blew ourselves up. So that's what she was like inspired by, Gigi. Mm-hmm. And so Marisol wakes and she meets Betty, who's an unexplained white woman in her house,
mm-hmm.
Played by Barbara Cranston. And she's holding her newborn daughter. And just like a side thing, every review for this film is like played by the amazing as always Barbara Cranston. And that's not to say she's not a decent actress. And she's very well loved in the horror community. But she's like barely in this film. She's not doing anything.
I wouldn't say like this is her best role either. Like she was fine.
They're like the ever delightful. It's like she's there for like 5 minutes and she's not delightful. She's like just there.
Yeah.
Like, she's just a tool. Like she's just supposed to be kind of creepy. And she's like, oh, darling, don't stress. But she doesn't do anything. Like she's not giving Get Out level performance of
simulation. She's giving NPC. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm still bitter about Jacob's wife. So don't at me. But every single time I was like, really? And it was absurd. It's every single review. Like I'm going to include other reviews of this film in the show notes. So go ahead and check it out yourselves, listeners. And you'll see the ever amazing, the always talented, the beautiful. I was like, what is this? Why are we up? Like, get off Barbara's dick here. What is happening? I don't know. Regardless, Betty takes Marisol out on the town, showing her the tranquil Pleasantville suburbia that, in true American melting pot fashion, features people of all races. Mm-hmm. And they're all happy. And it's wonderful here. And you made it. Marisol, you made it.
Yeah.
It was all worth it. And she's like, okay, but can I hold my baby?
And she's like, no. She's like,
no. You're tired. Yeah. Excuse me. That's not... What's happening? Even the young boy Ricky and the caring killer Santo and the disgusting villain Oscar, her ex-boyfriend, are here and they're living their best life.
All smiles.
They're all smiles.
All that uncanny valley look in their eye.
Yeah. Hi. And they, I will say there's some, it gets kind of in the middle when we're in this like Pleasantville time, it gets a little dry. It gets a little run-in. But there are moments that I was like, no. Like, when she's talking to someone and they're just... She's talking to Santo and they're figuring out that something isn't right.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone stops what they're doing and just, like, turns and looks at them. I was like, that's good. Like, the glitches and some of the other things that are like, something isn't right. First of all, I was like... The lamp. The Reddit lamp. So you know something's wrong. And that was exciting. But it was really like those very small moments of just like everyone being quiet. they don't stop. That's unsettling as F.
Yeah.
Each day is a blur of conformity and pastel dread as Marisol fights against the glitching universe. And when she protests or asks questions, she's lectured about culture shock and told to shut up and fit in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, no, honey, it's all fine. You're a little homesick.
Yeah.
And like, no, I'm like reality sick.
Yeah. And like all the white people in it that are like either the NPCs or the mayor are like the enforcers of like whatever, like if you don't assimilate, you are watched, you're a target. And that's very
assimilate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And refusing to settle and growing agitated at her inability to hold her own damn child, Marisol begins to explore and test the confines of her new world. And what she finds is that this isn't the American dream, but rather an American simulation. Mm-hmm. So she and the others who've been caught trying to go over the border are now in a shabby, disgusting facility, understaffed and inhumane, and not that far from reality. That's what the facilities kind of look like now. This is a facility. The facility is a lab that has them strapped into these makeshift VR contraptions, which is what I imagine the Don't Worry Darling girls are in. Mm-hmm. And they're fed brown goop by way of a feeding tube, which explains like the ravenous and unsettling imagery of the folks eating in the simulation. They're like, it's really mm-hmm. gross. And especially if you
have really misophobia,
it's a mess. It's a problem. And I get it. It's also like mentioned like when from the people who are outside that this is cheaper than putting them in a real system, because then they have to treat them maybe kind of like humans. So here they don't have to.
Yeah.
So they just kind of put them in there until they die and they can conduct experiments. And it's, again, not super far from what happens in reality. So Marisol continues to fight against the simulation, fearing for her baby's life, and enlists the help of Santo. And the two hatch a plan that has them escaping the facility. And they release all of the others. And as they make their way to their country of dreams, Marisol turns back home. Mm-hmm. And she tells Santo she's going home. There's nothing for her in America, and that the dream has the fantasy of the greener grass has been expelled. Mm-hmm. She sees America for what it is, not a dream, but a nightmare.
Yeah.
And that's true. And it was like as complicated as the reality of that situation. Like she just had a baby and she's going to walk home from the border. Again, she's like so worth it. So worth it to not be here. The better the devil, you know, right? At least I get to speak my language.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was a funny part where they're like escaping and there's like an announcement going on and it's like in English and they're like, gay.
What is it?
And they're like, I don't fucking know. I don't know that. And that to me is also funny because they never ever intended someone who doesn't speak English to have to be conscious or cognizant of what's happening. But it also makes me think of all the like Israeli notices that have been going out to the Palestinians where it's like they're in English and it's like, who is this for?
Mm-hmm.
Who is this for?
And so they can say they told someone something, I guess.
Yeah. And we can read it and we're the ones it's for. Anyway, as gross and unsettling as the film can be at times, it is rather subdued. This was intentional, as director Gigi Salguero wanted to cover the heavy topics with care, working to not re-traumatize her audience with the real horrors of the immigration system that is here. In an interview with Variety titled Into the Dark, Culture Shock Director on Timeless Qualities of Border Crossing Film, she said, "The brutality and the inhumane subject matter is there, and unfortunately we see that every day for a while now, and it's quite heartbreaking. I didn't want to make something so heartbreaking that we'd have trouble watching, because we already have enough trouble watching it every day." So I appreciate the care that she took in covering her and the team in covering the film. As far as like Into the Dark Hulu films go, this is definitely one of the best ones.
Yeah.
We've also covered New Year, New Me in our New Year, New Me section. And that was a part of Into the Dark. It is still not as good as this one. And it is an instance where we see the power of sharing the screen and opportunities with new voices. Imagine if this film had bigger studio backing and Olivia Wilde money.
Yeah.
And I absolutely understand the decision to hold back on some of her punches and to show us without traumatizing us. And as a horror lover, there are many times where I simply have to say enough. Like, I'm not doing that. Mm-hmm. I just accidentally saw a clip on Instagram because someone posted a most horrifying graphic scene on Instagram. And I was like stuck watching it because you get stuck. And I was just like, I'm never going to watch this movie. I never would have watched this movie. And now I'll never get that out of my head.
Yeah.
It was horrifying. Yeah. It was gross. And I was like, why is this? Who did this? I was mad. Like, at the person who posted it and the person who created it.
Yeah.
I was like, that didn't need to exist. Anyway, so all that to say, as much as I love horror, there are times when I'm like, do you really need that?
Yeah.
Do you? Or sometimes I ask, who is this for?
Yeah.
Before promptly turning it off because it's not for me. That's what the answer is.
Yeah.
Thinking of them. I think that was what it was called. The, was it Amazon show? Not for me. I tried. And I was like, no, I know this story.
Yeah.
I know this story in real life.
Who is it for then? It's like the audience is like the people who don't know, I guess. But like, other than that, like, you don't want to re-traumatize your audience that does know who might be your main audience for watching this movie.
Right. Yeah. Right. And it's... Yeah, I think that similarly to like the Purge election year and all of those things, and thinking like when we're covering, like, how much of this is our responsibility to educate the audience and not traumatize them?
Yeah.
Like, who is it? Who are we telling? Because some people you want to traumatize. You want to traumatize them with the truth.
Yeah.
Right. But you don't want to traumatize us who know the truth. So it's a delicate line. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think a film like that, for a film like this, working to address some truly horrifying realities, her pulled punches can sometimes hurt more because it isn't fully educating.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're like, let's move on to the next thing. Yeah. And without the full knowledge of the horrors of this very complex situation, viewers may be left wondering why Marisol makes such a dangerous trip in the first place. And while 9 months pregnant, no less, for us, she's the hero, right? She's fighting through to get a better life for her child. But for someone else, she could be seen as a reckless mother. And for a lot of the mothers who are making that actual trip, that's exactly what they're dubbed.
Yeah,
they're the monsters for putting their children in peril. And people just don't understand. OK, why does she feel like she has to do this?
Mm-hmm.
What would compel that mother to go through something like that? Instead of asking that, we're like, oh, well, look at she shouldn't have the baby. Let's take it. And then we lost the baby anyway.
Yeah, it's I'll get into it a little bit in my section.
Me too.
The history is gross.
Me too. Because that's just the thing, right? Is there. Absolutely, what she covers and the way she covers it, I get it. And also, to get the funding that she needed for this film and to get it greenlit, she absolutely could not say all the things that she probably wanted to say.
Yeah.
Right. And the care that went into that to say enough
mm-hmm.
is great. Like, honestly, like, all the credit to that. Right.
Yeah.
Because Marisol is not unique in this journey and in this situation. Because many women will find themselves in the same one, just as pregnant as she is, with the same desperation and the same want for that dream. There's many Rickies, there's many Santos, they're all there. And it's hard to encapsulate all of the horrors and tragedies that go in line with America and immigration, and also just our impact on the countries that they're immigrating from.
Yeah.
Right? So since Gigi won't go there and couldn't go there, and chose not to go there, we will. Mm-hmm. That's how the ghouls go.
Well, yeah, that's so why watch our the companion film. Piece to the film is that now you get to learn all the why of what is taking place.
Yeah, you get the context, and I hope either you watch it, listen, and watch again.
Yeah.
Or listen and watch it and have the context of why that's horrible. And I'd also say, like, there could be like a whole little study book of mm-hmm. ghouls where you watch this one. You also watch Tigers Are Not Afraid and the La Girona.
Mm-hmm.
And then you watch the film and you're like, oh, OK, I get it.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to learn, we got you. So let's talk about The Horror of ICE and Immigration in America, right? An article on The Guardian aptly titled Death in the Sands, The Horror of the U.S.-Mexico Border, writer Reese Jones describes the sad tale of a young group of a group of young boys making a run for the border, only to end up dead on their side, never making it to America after being gunned down by Border Patrol. And that's just how he opens, just how they open that article. And they explain further, like, the rampant growth of patrols, because it didn't start this way. And that's what I found really interesting is, like, how did we get here, especially with ICE being, like, a brand new baby organization, to have such a heavy hold on what is happening. Anyway, so they explain that in the early days, which is like the 1800s, 1890s, the Border Patrol was small and underfunded. There were initially 450 agents who provided their own horses and uniforms. They were independently, like, they had to provide their own materials. And it was like, just to protect, because there's craziness going on. It was the 1890s.
Right? Yeah. If anything, it was like gross, like, enforcers. Like, who are like, I'm going to protect my land. It's not your land, friend.
Yeah, for sure. And also, like, when we think of, like, the lawless West, too, we did also have, like black sheriffs and things like that. So it was different. It was just different. But by 2010, the Border Patrol had more than 20,000 agents. So we're thinking 450 to now 20,000. And I get it. America's huge, right? What are we trying to do? The usual order of operations doesn't end so much in death, but instead in deportation. Like, that's the best outcome you could have, is that they send you back and they don't lose you or abuse you or kill you.
Yeah.
So the deportation process is not quick, but it is still defeatist. It's sad because you worked in danger to get here and we put you back in danger.
Yeah.
Because why? Anyway, so Jones shares that there's a growth in that process, too, in deportations, saying before 1986, there were rarely more than 20,000 deportations a year. By the mid-2000s, the number was 400,000 a year, and the number of migrants in detention facilities increased from 85,000 in 1995 to 440,000 in 2013. And surprisingly, not to me, more people have been deported from the U.S. during the Obama presidency than during any previous administrations. And that wasn't surprising to me, but yes.
Yeah, it started with Reagan and then just kept going strong.
And, you know, you're overcompensating too. Like, look at me, I'm doing it. I'm doing what the Americans want. And that's not true. But yeah, 440,000 in 2013. That's old news. Right. The increase in staff and the hyper militarized state of the Border Patrol has resulted in a spike of killings. So it's not only just that we have more people there and that we, you know, have more patrols going on. They're also super funded, like grotesquely funded, and they're getting militarized like equipment for just being around. So the funding for the border surveillance has grown exponentially and with little to no accountability, just like the military.
Yep.
The military
and the police
keeps failing its audits. And we're like, oh, what happened to the $3 trillion? Where did it go? And they're like, I don't know.
Protection.
That's somewhere.
We have
somewhere.
To protect it's in the America's book somewhere. Interest. No, they're using it to destabilize nations. I'll talk about that.
Yeah, but on the books, it's somewhere. Yeah. It's somewhere in the books. I know it's around here somewhere. Come back a few, two, three, seven more times. Yeah. We'll tell you where it is.
But we got to arrest like the guy who sent laptops back to Amazon because he stole a couple $1,000 from Amazon. That's a problem. But the military, trillions of dollars. Doesn't trillions. Matter. Not going to punish anybody.
Trillions. Well, anyway, further, Jones provides us with a glimpse into the dangers not a soul and those like her were facing during her trek. The two rocks they find themselves between equally dangerous and brutal. Like I said, that one of the most horrifying parts of the film, and it's too honest. And he says, or Reese's. Unfortunately, direct violence, including killings by the Border Patrol and on the Mexican side as cartels work to solidify control over profitable smuggling routes, does not even scratch the surface of the violence that surrounds the U.S.-Mexico border. The Border Patrol has recovered more than 6,000 bodies there since the 1990s. That's attributable to the construction of the border wall and the massive Border Patrol presence. Migrants are funneled to more dangerous and remote locations, just like migrants at the edges of the EU. Instead of crossing in a city, migrants are making the arduous journey through the deserts of Arizona, hiking 50 or maybe or more kilometers through arid and desolate terrain. So we didn't even like get to see that because the horrors instead were like the people. It's not even just the environment that people like people are drowning. People are dying of dehydration. Babies are dying. Like, just trying to get here because you're making it that much harder for them to go through the correct processes because those don't exist. You've removed the correct, the safe processes, the ways for us to just invite people in. And instead you're trying to close it off and just labeling them as criminals for just wanting a different life.
Or you make it like too expensive to go the safer route in the first place, like the increase in the like travel expenses from like $2,000 to like $12,000. Like, not a single person is going to just $12,000 per family member to travel from Guatemala to the United States. Like, that's not.
Yeah. And even in her journey, like Marisol's in the film, she had to fork over money so constantly because they were taking advantage of it. Mm-hmm. And then like you come here and they're taking like, it's just, what do you do? Like the whole time I was like, where did she get that money? Like, even I was like, where is that? Like, and how detrimental it is because it's like bleeding from her. And if she did somehow get to America safely, right? Then what?
Yeah.
And what even them like, for her and her baby.
And even them like confiscating their stuff when they are under like the Border Patrol, like when they're like taken. Like, imagine how much money they make just literally from stealing the items of people as they're crossing the border. Mm-hmm. And they're in detention.
So gross. All this is like the thesis of this is that there's no end to the horrors of immigration. And they're like similar to what we're going to do next week. There's so much that we could talk about that it's hard to file down into an episode. So we're trying. Yeah. So the trek to this American dream, one which we know as Americans is false and designed to oppress and erase cultures and peoples, is only half the battle. Once here, having survived against all odds from both sides of the border, migrants find themselves still in danger, in active danger. And Marisol, motivated by her child, whom she hoped to give a better life, would be terribly disappointed to find not only the lack of care, but the danger of moving your child across the border. She risks losing her child altogether, not just like by death, but them taking her from him.
Yeah.
In an article in the Times, they brought to light the case of 85,000 missing children, explaining, while HHS, which is the Health and Human Services, checks on all minors by calling them a month after they begin living with their sponsors, which is when they take a child from their family on the border, they give it to sponsors, which is just some random American. Data obtained by the Times showed that over the last 2 years, the agency could not reach more than 85,000 children, meaning that these 85,000 children have been shipped off somewhere and are now unaccounted for, or they're not able to be regularly monitored or checked. Like, we have, like, without, like, this very flimsy way that we're checking on these children. So it's not that they've, like, poof, vanished. It's just that we don't have solid ways of ensuring their safety, their well-being, and their health, because there's like one way, like you call them and if they don't answer, okay, we don't know where they are.
Yeah,
we don't know if they're good. And even just knowing anything about our foster care system, I can't imagine what the sponsor system is like.
Yeah.
So there's, with that, there's no real way for the parents, the real parents, to find them or make certain that they're safe. And the young boy, Ricky, who's traveling on his own to America, is not a far-fetched idea either. Because just last year, a report by the Council of Foreign Relations stated that more than 152,000 unaccompanied minors were found at the U.S.-Mexico border in the fiscal year of 2022.
Yeah,
that was in the article that I found, the 85,000 children nonsense. Families aside, America's immigration facilities have been revealed to be inhumane and dangerous, too. So even if you get here and you put into one of these systems, that's a nightmare. After fighting for many years, NPR was able to obtain documents detailing the treatment of migrants in these facilities around the U.S. And in an article titled "Government's Own Experts Found Barbaric and Negligent Conditions in ICE Detention," one report revealed that in Pennsylvania, a group of correctional officers strapped a mentally ill male ICE detainee into a restraint chair and gave the lone female officer a pair of scissors to cut off his clothes for a strip search. Upon reviewing this, a federal inspector remarked, "There is no justifiable correctional reason that required the detainee who had a mental health condition to have his clothes cut off by a female officer while he was compliant in a restraint chair. This is a barbaric practice and clearly violates basic principles of humanity." And that's just one of the very many, many robust stories in that from all over. And that's just the one I picked from Pennsylvania, because that's where we are.
Yeah.
Right. Because honestly, the horrors go on for migrants in this country. The American dream is so far removed from possibility. The melting pot is a veiled threat. Right. The horror stories behind ICE detention centers have no end. And from violence, cruel treatment and inhumane conditions, there's cases like the uterus collector seem unshocking. Yeah. A situation not off the beaten path for America to start with, where a nurse came forward as a whistleblower detailing instances where they were forced, there were forced hysterectomies and medical neglect at an ICE center in Irwin County, Georgia, which you can listen to our episode about that as well, where we talked to these documentarians covering how hysterectomies were happening at our prison systems in California to Black and brown women. What's even more horrifying about ICE is that they are a brand new institution. They were founded in 2003 to promote public safety and national security and to rid us of the illegal aliens. And no one's illegal. No one's an alien. Yeah. You're a human. And it's a brand new organization, you know, sprung up to with this air of safety after 9/11, and it is outfitted with military grade weapons and equipment. And it's military grade weapons and equipment that they use on civilians in American cities and towns. So it's like the military is supposed to go somewhere else and mess things up, and that sucks already. Now you're also here?
Yeah.
So no longer are we just a threat at the border, but we're here in our country's soil. Right. And all this to say that I totally understand Gigi Salguero's need to approach the film the way that she did.
Yeah.
Because of all of this heavy things that I had to unpack to fully understand and to include in this episode, I'm horrified. Right. And so I'm thankful. Right. That she did that. And to have us empathize with Marisol and twist the American dream into the monster that it proves itself to be. Right. Mm-hmm. And I found no end to the different horrifying things while I was doing the research for this episode about, you know, America's immigration system. There could be so many movies made about this, and I'm glad that this is the one that we start with, right? My only consolation, I will say, was that Direct Action does get the goods, because the Shutdown Berks Coalition was able to do just that. And they shut down the Berks ICE Detention Center. There's some local Philadelphia documentarians who are covering these issues and really highlighting the crimes and just injustice of the ICE folks. And so it's one small step for the whole of America, but it's massive to the populations that are here and to the families that are here who were separated from their loved ones. And so for the aspiring Marisols, Rickys, and Santos out there, it can be a small win and a chance at maybe not the American dream, but a dream nonetheless.
Yeah. Well said, Gabe. My face is doing
sorry
that.
Sorry to everybody.
Yeah. I was just like listening to my face is doing that stress thing that it does when I'm like, oh, that's really awful. Okay.
Brain process.
Yeah. And I'm just going to kind of continue that vibe. I'm sorry, friends. As we said, there's a content warning for this episode, including violence, murder, destabilization of nations, genocide, et cetera. Like, we're talking about all of it, we're unpacking all of it. And unfortunately, this is like the very real reality. We get a film that does presents it to us in a way that's just like gives you the next step, I guess, in terms of the questions. You're like, why is that? And then yeah. we looked it up. So here we are. We're helping you understand. but I titled my section, The United States' Long History of Destabilizing Nations and Acting Like Surprise Pikachu When Migration Increases. We have discussed the seeded history of the U.S. playing puppeteer in other countries before. So the unpacking of this topic will not be anything fundamentally new to this show. We did this in our episode on La Llorona, covering U.S. intervention in Guatemala, among others. As on the nose and quirky and fun as this film was, a lot of it was intentionally in your face. And I remember even when we were watching, we were like, that was so silly. But also, like, I'm sure it matters. Like, especially like, after researching and reading about it, like, it was all very intentionally done as like, why? And then you're like, oh, I'm going to go look up why. Mm-hmm. So in processing the context and reality of what millions of migrants face at the U.S. border, this film's more silly moments hold purpose because we don't. And it's because the director and writers don't want us to miss the point, the nods mm-hmm. and the cues to information. So this is why we love us some media analysis. a character that really impacted me and really broke my heart in culture shock was Ricky, a young boy from Guatemala who was seeking safety in America, only to be detained and murdered at the border. The loss of this character was as unfortunate as it was. An intentional one, an unfortunate reminder of what happens to many children who arrive at the U.S. border who don't make it. Mm-hmm. His background as a Guatemalan migrant also calls attention to the many Guatemalan migrants that risk their lives trying to reach the U.S., fleeing a situation that the U.S. helped create. And in an article titled Fleeing a Hell the U.S. Helped Create, Why Central Americans Journey North by Julian Borger, they explore the historical context of the dysfunctional relationship between the U.S. and its southern neighbors, particularly Central America. They highlight the root causes of migration, including inequality, violence, and historical U.S. interventions. They also call attention to the loss of a young Guatemalan girl named Jacqueline Can Makin, who died in U.S. custody in 2018. And it's just one, unfortunately, of many. So I don't know if the director was trying to connect Ricky, because this was made in 2019, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that death happened in 2018. Very well could be. It could be a call to that loss, but also the losses of like countless children at the border. So they go on to say the forces driving ordinary people to leave their homes and put their lives at risk, crossing deserts with smugglers to get to the U.S. border are deeply rooted in Central America's history of inequality and violence, in which the U.S. has long played a defining role. So I'm really going to unpack the ways that the United States has destabilized other nations and then thus influenced the need for migration, and how the reason I'm covering in this way is because it's like the way that we are pitched the migration crisis as the news industry is, will be like migration crisis, immigration, blah, blah, blah. We need to close the borders. It's a national security risk. And it's like, these are human lives that the U.S. has disrupted,
mm-hmm.
destabilized their entire nation. And it's like the amount of things the U.S. has to pay reparations on. This is one of them.
Yeah. The audacity for them to be like, they're the problem.
Yeah. No, because they're not. They're the result of the U.S. doing crappy things, horrific, awful things. Just to give you like kind of the Spark Notes version, the United States has destabilized Central American countries for various reasons, including economic and geopolitical interests. Some key points are as follows. During the Cold War, the U.S. pursued policies in Central America to counter perceived communist influences, specifically in Guatemala. For the article I mentioned before, Guatemala's long civil war can in turn be traced back to the 1954 coup against the democratically elected president Jacobo Arbenz, which was backed by the U.S. Washington-backed Guatemalan military, which was responsible for the genocide of the native population. An estimated 200,000 people were killed between 1960 and 1996, which is what we discussed in our La Llorona episode. America has decimated Guatemala. Mm-hmm. So Ricky's need to travel if you wanted to read alone. That article alone, is honestly for many people, like the only way that they can stay with their families is to migrate. And the price of that migration has, because of the policies and border lockdowns, exponentially risen from like $2,000 to like $12,000 per person. And mm-hmm. that blocks the safe route, essentially. People are forced to take the most dangerous route because it is just not fiscally possible mm-hmm. in a disenfranchised country filled with civil war to expect a human being to pay $12,000 to get here per individual. So they travel the only way that they can, only to breach the border and be met with what we saw from the film. So it continues on that the U.S. supported authoritarian regimes and military interventions in El Salvador, Honduras, and Nicaragua during the 1970s and 1980s to curb leftist movements. Specifically, El Salvador was trapped in a cycle of violence that can be traced back to civil conflict in which the U.S. was a protagonist, training and funding right-wing death squads in the name of fighting communism. The quote goes, the civil war was really destroyed the economic base of the country and any sense of functioning democracy. It left a massively militarized society. Next is the Nicaraguan Contra War. In Nicaragua, the U.S. supported the Contras, a rebel group, in their efforts to overthrow the Sandinista government during the 1980s. And the Contras were specifically accused of human rights abuses and conflicts that led to a significant destabilization of that region. So the U.S. backed that group.
Always on the wrong side of history.
Yep. And look at it happen now.
and so, we're like, we're surprised, Pikachu. Like, are you kidding?
Yeah. Additionally, economic interests, thinking of like the countless just corporations that have ceded interests in Central America and have taken advantage and disenfranchised those populations through factories and other cruel labor laws. It's also just poisoned their land. Mm-hmm. But economic interests such as demand for resources and corporate investments have played a role in U.S. interventions in Central America. Multinational corporations, often with ties to the U.S., have been involved in industries like agriculture, mining, and energy, leading to disputes over land and resources, as well as just like destruction of those lands and resources. There was a documentary, I'm going to try to retroactively cite it in here, but I watched it, I think in college or after, I don't know. It was a long time ago, but it was all about how a factory basically like poisoned the land. And that all these people were basically getting sick and having like cancer and other things because not even that they were working in the factories, but because the areas around it had been so polluted by these factories. So that is just another instance of why someone might want to leave a place and not even just want to, but need to for their survival. Mm-hmm. Additionally, drug created violence. The demand of illegal drugs in the U.S. has contributed to a drug trafficking and violence in Central America. U.S. anti-drug policies such as Plan Colombia have had unintended consequences, pushing drug cartels into neighboring countries like Honduras and Guatemala. America's war on drugs, essentially. You know how Reagan loved it. They war on things.
On drugs. It's definitely on drugs and not black people, right?
Yeah. So all these policies trickle in other places and cause problems. As well as these things, the migration crisis, the economic and political inability resulting in past interventions have contributed to a migration crisis with people fleeing violence and seeking better economic opportunities in the U.S. and not even receiving those. There's a few articles that I cite that I haven't like outlined specifically, but that are in our show notes that kind of go through like the fact that like the racism in America and how that influences job markets and access to fair wages makes it so like if you are not a white man in America, your access to the American dream doesn't exist. And especially for immigrant populations that are because of being at fear of risk of ICE and other detaining organizations will work in safe and inhumane conditions just to like survive once they mm-hmm. get here, even if they get through. They're not going to reach economic stability or any semblance of the American dream. Anyone who does is lucky. Mm-hmm. It's an exception. To the overall mm-hmm. experience. And then the impact on Indigenous communities. Indigenous communities in Central America have been disproportionately affected by U.S. interventions and economic activities leading to displacement and land conflicts. We know how much America hates Indigenous people. They want all the land. America wants all of it, and they don't care who they have to murder to get it. And we see this time and time again. So that's not even touching the historical context of America and the Spanish impact on Mexico and the destabilization and the economic disenfranchising of that country. I'll briefly touch on it. So following the Mexican-American War of 1846 to 1848, this had severe and lasting consequences for Mexico. Here are just some ways of how Mexico was harmed by this war. Territorial loss, economic disenfranchisement and devastation, social disruption because of the economy, poverty and social unrest, as well as Indigenous communities being decimated by the war, political instability. The defeat in the war intensified political instability. It led to changes in government with different leaders and factions vying for power. An impact on Mexican identity. The war had a profound impact on Mexican national identity. The sense of loss contributed to the shaping of a strong Mexican nationalism that emphasized resistance to foreign aggression. And just like all these things, relationships with the U.S., there's been a conflict there. Like recently, the U.S. was like, we're going to go get all the cartel guys. And the president was like, no. Like, go, you don't own here. You stole our land. You stole Texas and California. Leave us alone. So, and then there's just like a legacy of injustice that has taken place, where, as we see at the border, just a true lack of care or regard for human lives there. So the Mexican-American War had far-reaching consequences for Mexico, impacting its territorial integrity, economic, social fabric, and national identity. And these scars of this conflict continue to shape Mexico's historical narrative and its relationship with the United States. So that's just like your Spark Notes version. So I'll start to wrap up soon. The situation that many migrants are fleeing make this travel a necessity for survival, as if you didn't get that from my little section and you got it in Gabe's. However, once they arrive at the border, as we saw in the film, the racism of the American system treats them as inhumanely as possible, resulting in severe harm, both emotionally and physically, and sometimes even in death. The systemic dehumanization and othering of a population is something America has had a lot of experience in and utilizes at the border. We discuss this at length next week. Whether it's validating genocide or reframing colonization or even reinforcing white supremacy as a validation for harm, America took the playbook from Western Europe and ran with it. We see this othering on screen in the doctor that conducts non-consensual experiments on the migrants detained at the facility with no care for their survival or safety. This is not something that is exclusive to the movie. This has happened many times throughout real U.S. history, which we've talked about extensively. But honestly, at this point, I feel like we should like write a book, companion piece for each each movie that we cover, because honestly, like, it's there's a lot of historical context that really just makes these points in the film hit harder, and especially if you've been like inundated with American media that just severely others immigrant populations and migrant populations at this border, at all borders, anyone who is BIPOC, etc. There is just a lot of like misinformation and intentional language used as a way of dehumanizing and othering these groups, so that similarly to how like people view prison systems, that it's all oriented to make us not care. It's all, or because if we did care, we would do something. If we knew the depth of what was actually taking place, you would feel compelled as a human being to do something. The purpose of what all the like historical writing around it and everything else is to make us not really see what's happening. So therefore we will not care.
And just show them as not people. If you take away their people, then we don't feel bad about it. There's a really good Black Mirror episode about that, actually.
Yeah. This like systemic othering that has made it so we can look away. And like, honestly, it's like there's America. There's a reason that Germany followed America, like looked at America on how to dehumanize and other people during the Holocaust. A whole thing. Like they watched us on how to do it and then copied that. So like there is a long history of the United States intentionally skewing the story, changing the narrative to benefit and instill a sense of United States pride and a lack of recognition of the harm that has been caused. So with all that to say, the last thing I'll cover is just like the psychological harm of assimilation, and that we kind of see in the film, like the whole idea of like in the simulation, like this white man would think that that would be the glorious American dream. Like these people are traveling not to become Americans. They're coming like to preserve their culture, to live. Yeah. So this like melting pot, icky, like, oh, I speak English. I don't have my accent. Like I wear pastels and live in this house covered in American flags. Like, you know, like so I eat pizza, like the grossest looking pizza I've ever seen. Would be in Texas. And like, just cause like, you know, the New York pizza is different. And then like, also just like the burgers and like all the other American staple foods that are just very much not
like, why wouldn't they want to keep eating their food?
Yeah. So it's like this like whitewashing of people who are moving into these countries, or specifically the United States, that does extreme like mental harm. And like the idea that the simulation that people would want to experience before their death would be this like really eerie, gross, just like America time. Like, you know, like it's just really only he would think that would be like the sweet send off that they would need. You know what I mean?
Like, I gave you America.
Like, yeah. And it's like, that's not what we should
people
want.
Are here for. That's
no,
what
they're literally for. Like, if anything, it's to preserve their own cultures and like find a safe place to be themselves and live. Jesus. And that's not what America gives them, because it's drenched in racism and genocide, honestly. So last thing I'll cover is cultural assimilation, how it affects mental health, which isn't very well mined. They have a whole article that kind of goes into like all the details of this and like what forced assimilation versus chosen assimilation and how that impacts the mind. But one quote that stood out to me is that cultural assimilation can lead to loss of identity and cause significant psychological stress, specifically for immigrants. This can range from homesickness to depression to severe mental illness. In addition, the act of migration can cause an individual to experience cultural bereavement, a form of grief caused by the loss of one's culture, thus a core aspect of their identity. And this can further exacerbate by the loss of key cultural markers such as language, traditions, customs, and food, which can also intensify the alienation felt by an individual when trying to relate to someone, a family member, or someone from where they came from. So it's just like the way that the simulation itself and the idea of like what America wants people to do when they come here is just so detrimental and harmful to the individuals who are trying to find safety. So even once they get through, even if they survive the border, the like culture shock, the kind of, like the survival necessitated code switching that needs to happen is just so detrimental to the people who are having to experience that it just kind of perpetuates that harm.
And I think like, and he also the mayor is like, he's this white man, he's like, yeah, you just have culture shock, it's normal, you'll get over it. And it's like, okay, but when we acknowledge what culture shock is, right, it is this reaction to having your history and like your regular life like erased and ignored, and you're like being forced into a whole different like understanding and operation and like relearning things, and that's really traumatizing. And to just brush it off and be like, oh, this is just culture shock, get over it. And not labeling it as like it is a trauma.
And it's just like totally neglecting like the US's like long history of like what they've done to their own native population in like the residential schools and Even the sponsorship program that they're forcing children into, I imagine at least some of the time, if not most of the time, they're being put in families that do not align with who, where they're coming from, mm-hmm. and do not allow for them to be culturally safe.
Yeah. And I think that, so like in Don't Worry, Darling, when, you know, Alice was confronting Jack and saying, like, you don't love me, like, you can't love me, right? Because you put me here and you're trying to strip me of who I am to fit into this thing. That's what's happening in this film. And except instead of one man wanting you to fulfill the purposes of what he deems a wife should, you are a person who's being confronted by an entire country of ideals trying to reduce you to the housewife that you're supposed to be, that kind of like ideology. It's even more terrifying because it's a whole system that's coming down on you.
And that just as a fun, not the government article that they found from the NPR article that you found, it was 1,600 pages
of the
just like horrible reports. Things that have happened
Like 1,600 pages, right, of the reports, and they've only been here since 2003.
Yeah,
it's younger than my baby sister.
Yeah,
you have not a lot of time, and you've done all this. It's a nightmare. One little thing I will say, just as like a for folks like to add, like here's if you enjoyed this and you want to learn more, there is a book that is horror and is beautifully written. It's so lovely written. I am transfixed by it, called Vampires of El Norte by Isabel Cañas, who's done like, you know, gothic horror before, but this one talks about, you know, it's set in a time when Americans are trying to come and take over pieces of Mexico, and it's like the families that were in power in Mexico, you know, getting up their own forces to go and fight against them. And that's like happening in the background, because like the forefront is like monsters in love, actually. And it's beautiful, again, beautifully written. So highly, highly recommend that as a read, and that you're also like subconsciously learning about the political systems and the situations that were happening in Mexico at the time. And so that's stuff that, like, I don't know. And I learn a lot of that stuff from like her or Sofia Moreno Garcia. I learned so much from her too. So you can, like this film, you can absolutely learn and become interested and knowledgeable in situations that we wouldn't be fully aware of in a, you know, fictional entertainment place. Like this can start as something that you're like, wow, this is just like an interesting horror movie to watch. Now, let's do some research. Let's see how we got here and why they're saying this and why Marisol would travel to America for this dream, behind this guy dream, while 9 months pregnant.
Yeah.
Why would Ricky travel all by himself from Guatemala through up to America for what? Do your research and listen to us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... thank you so much for listening, y'all, and I hope you give it a chance. It doesn't have like a whole lot of money. I still think it was interesting, right? And I think it gets the point across. It doesn't try to trick you. It's trying too hard for you to know, like you were saying, Kat, like it's focused more on you understanding and knowing what's going on, mm-hmm. and not hiding its intentions at all. It's like, we're not, you know, what
it's like, it doesn't want you to miss the point at all. Like it really is just like, this means this.
Yeah.
What are you going to do about it?
And it's like, there are gross points and there are like some somewhat bloody moments, like especially at the end, mm-hmm. but even still it's very subdued in comparison to some horror films out there. And so, and it happens in the final act, really, like any of the gore or horror would happen really like the last 10 minutes of the film. So besides the disgusting eating, most of it is, it's just like a psychological thriller. And so if you could handle don't worry, darling, you can absolutely handle this. And so I highly recommend and to look at it with your media analysis glasses on and appreciate that it exists. And everyone tell Gigi Sal Guerrero, thank you. Thank you. I help you do more stuff.
Yeah.
And I love you like as a creator. Good job.
Agreed.
So check out all those episodes of The Ghouls and don't get married.
Tell your kids. Mm-hmm. I don't want to change it to something else because then it's...
Because it's still sad because then they're here. They're just in America and you don't want them to be here.
Or they didn't.
Or they didn't get to America. You're right.
And yeah.
It sucks. All of it sucks. So, bye.
Bye.